Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are back and welcome to Nation Radio and Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260, brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com. Hi there, it's Alan Mitchell. Our focus is Oilers past, present, and future, plus the NHL's biggest stories every week. And our guests today include Tyler Dello from MC79 Hockey, J.F. Hormstrom from LA Daily News, Kent Simpson from Team 1260's Oil Kings broadcast, Jason Greger from Oilers Nation and Team 1260, and also Brent Parker, president of the Regina Pats. Well, today's word is craptastic. After the week that we had as Oiler fans, man, a season that had plenty of ups and downs took a step right into the elevator shaft with the news that Taylor Hall would miss the rest of the season. We got that last night later on. High ankle sprain, 8 weeks, and based on the video evidence, it's a wonder the kid's knee ligaments aren't in shreds. So believe it or not, we should be thankful that he's Gumby and made of rubber. Absolutely incredible injury, and I doubt very much whether he fights again in the next couple of years anyway. The big stories of the last week, of course, the Hall injury, Alex Hemsky injured as well, and that brings up the question, do the Oilers players need more protection? And also, we'll talk about the trade deadline and Dustin Penner's leaving town. And how long is this rebuild going to take anyway? And we have many, many guests to talk about that. And we should let you know, there's a couple of things you should know about right away. The Oilers recalled Alex Giroux. He's second in overall scoring in the American Hockey League right now, 65 points in 61 games. They recalled Giroux earlier today, and the word is he'll be in Colorado by game time tonight. Don't know what line he'll play on or who he'll play with, but looking at the roster so far, without the recall, they have obviously lost Penner and now Hall. There was a definite lack of skill, so you're forwards were going to be, your wingers were likely to be Pajarvi along with Eberle and Horkoff, and then Gagne would be with Jones and Omark. But there's a little bit of leeway now because of the fact that Alex Giroux has been recalled. So we'll look forward to that. Later on in this hour, J.P. Hornstra from LA Daily News and Kent Simpson, Team 1260 analyst. But we begin the show today with Tyler Dello from one of the very innovative Oiler blogs, MC79 Hockey. Welcome to the show, Tyler.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Good. How are you, man?
Not too bad.
Let's begin with your assessment of the Dustin Penner trade.
I don't really like it. I don't like what the Oilers got back for him. To me, it's all about kind of the broader context of it and putting this in the context of what the Oilers are doing. And basically what the trade says, first of all, is that they have no intention of competing next year because, you know, losing Dustin Penner creates a pretty significant hole in the roster for them. It's another NHL player gone, and in return they got players who aren't going to do anything next year. And then looking at the return itself, you know, if that's what Dustin Penner brings back, that's what Dustin Penner brings back. But I saw Dan Barnes saying that the Oilers see Colton Tubert as a number five defenseman. And, you know, a first-round pick in the 20s not worth a lot. And then you get a conditional second or third rounder. When you add it up, it's a lot of stuff that's going to help the Oilers maybe in 4 or 5 years. And it's also it's stuff that they probably could have got for less. So it's not a move that I would have made. And I really don't like what it says about where they're going in the immediate future.
Yeah, I think there are two issues here. The return on Penner, as far as the investment is concerned, and then secondly, it really does turn back the competition time clock. The trade I compared Penner's deal to was Mike Fisher to Nashville. It was a first-round pick from the Preds and a conditional 2012 selection. The Senators getting Nashville's third-rounder if the Preds win one playoff round. That would be a second-round pick in 2012 if the team wins two or more rounds. Fisher is signed for two more years at 4.2. Is that a similar deal in your eyes? Do you think that was a bad deal for Ottawa as well?
Well, it's a bit harder to say that that's a bad deal for Ottawa. They're different players and they play different roles. Like I'm sure it hasn't escaped anybody's notice that that Penner is a left winger and that the Oilers have two other famous left wingers right now in MPS and Hall. And so I'm sure that they saw him as being a bit of a, and you know, he's kind of an extra player in the future. But to turn the Ottawa thing, you know, they only got a first round pick back for him, and he was signed for 2 years. But I think Ottawa is kind of a few years behind where the Oilers are right now, and they are they just want to clean out the roster. So it's hard to, in my view, make a direct comparison between the Fisher trade and the Penner trade.
What do you think would have been a good return for Dustin Penner? Just blue sky. I don't expect specific names, but in terms of payback, not necessarily number of assets, but the type of player you would have liked to come back to Edmonton.
I would have liked them to have gotten a player back who, you know, you can reasonably expect to be in your top six within a year or 2 years. And I'm not married to the idea that it would have had to be just Dustin Penner going the other way himself. If they added something to Penner to get a better return. But the problem I have with the return is that it's stuff that you can get fairly easily, like fifth defenseman, which is what, you know, Dan Barnes says the Oilers expect Tuer to be. They aren't hard to acquire. And late first-round draft picks, they aren't that hard to acquire either. And in Penner, you've got a guy who's a useful player and can be a top-nine forward on a Stanley Cup winner. And I would have liked to have seen the Oilers try and use him to leverage into something that's harder to get, rather than getting something that, you know, a couple of things that are, if not dime a dozen, close to it, and not really advancing their agenda in terms of when they're going to be a team worth watching again.
I looked around the various media outlets, both blogs and MSM, and what do you make of comments from various sources like Elliot Friedman, Bob McKenzie, Jonathan Willis from the blogger world, that the return did meet their threshold for Penner in terms of return?
Well, I disagree with them. I don't think I'm an unreasonable guy. I think that a lot of the Eastern media sometimes, and this obviously doesn't include Jonathan, but they don't know how good Dustin Penner is, and they don't know how good players in the West are, particularly players on bad teams that people try to avoid watching. Mm-hmm. And Dustin Penner took a lot of heat during his time in Edmonton. And, you know, I probably was responsible for writing some of it, but, you know, it's at least some of it, I think, was about his, was about the circumstances in which he came to the Oilers and what they did give up to get him. And I think people had a hard time with that. And so I think that maybe the perception of Dustin Penner doesn't quite equate with the reality of what he is. And then I think the other point that I would make in response to Elliot and Jonathan and those people is that, I'm not sure that the return that the Oilers got for Dustin Penner advances the Oilers' rebuild. And, you know, the question I would have is, if it doesn't advance your rebuild, or if it's so far in the future that it's barely worth considering, is it really a trade that's sensible to make, or are you better off trying to make some other trade to get something better?
Tyler, did Craig McTavish's comments during his exit interview, leaving his Oilers coach, about Penner have an impact on his value, in your opinion?
To be honest, I've forgotten what MacT said. I take it they weren't positive.
No, he was basically saying, look, there's a hockey player there. I'm not able to get one out of them, but there's a hockey player there. It's just a great deal of frustration. And he had gone on for quite some time on that level.
Well, I doubt it. I assume teams look at Penner themselves, and the thing of it is it's a market, right? And, the trade for Penner happened around 2 o'clock or 2:30 Eastern time. And so obviously Tambellini got what he felt he needed in order to make the deal. And, it's hard to say that MacT's comments drove down the value, at least it is for me, when the deal was made. You know, it didn't need to be made, as Tambellini pointed out, and he didn't particularly use the deadline to really put the screws to the people with whom he was dealing. So I have a hard time seeing that the comments of his former coach would affect it.
Okay. This is Nation Radio on Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. Alan Mitchell in conversation with Tyler Dello from MC79 Hockey. I have a theory about Dustin Penner being one of hockey's versions of Moneyball, a player whose value outweighs the current perception because of underlying numbers. And I know you are a great researcher for advanced stats. Do you think Penner looks better when you view him through advanced stats as opposed to the on-again, off-again, saw him good Penner?
Oh, I think that's unquestionable. I personally was not much of a Dustin Penner fan after he joined the Oilers, and part of that was the circumstances in which he joined them. I thought it was, a terrible addition, and I thought it was kind of locking the Oilers into being no more than mediocre. So, I had my own biases about him before he joined the team, and he doesn't have, you know, like Alashemsky or Ryan Smith or a lot of the guys who've been on the Oilers, you know, over the years. He doesn't have some sort of defining quality that's just spectacular to watch. He's kind of just there. He's not sort of a visually interesting player. But, you know, I was turned on him because when you look at the numbers that guys like Derek Zona and Dennis King, who were doing the scoring chances, were turning up, you know, Dustin Penner was a better than average player, and he made a positive contribution to the team. And just to put Mac T's comments in a bit of context, too, I can understand Mac T being irritated with him because when you're the coach, you know, I think you're probably always trying to get your players from what they are to what they can be. And if you perceive a large gap there, I'm sure it's tremendously frustrating as a coach.
Yeah, and in fairness to McTavish, he said this week on TSN that it was more along the lines of him being frustrated about his inability to get a better player out of Dustin Penner, although it didn't really come out of that on the, like that on the Exit interview.
Yeah.
Which of the advanced stats do you value most? When you're evaluating a Dustin Penner or any player from a team that you're not necessarily familiar with, What are the three or four stats that you really look closely at and value heavily?
Well, it's kind of the opposite of value, but I always like to look at the shooting percentage that the player has and that the shooting percentage that he has when he's on the ice, because that really affects how many points you get, and that's awfully random. So if you've got a guy with a really high shooting percentage, like Gilbert Brulé last year, you can be misled into thinking that they're having a better season than they're actually having. And, you know, conversely, some years the pucks just don't go in, and you can be misled into thinking they're worse than they are. So I always like to look at that, as well as the save percentage behind them, to see if they're maybe just having a bad year where everything's going in, to first of all get a sense of whether or not there's anything that's really distorting what you see. I like to really use the stats to see how the coaches are using the players.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm big on the zone starts, and you know, it's funny. I was at a game in Ottawa in 2009. The Oilers were there, and I'd been looking at the stats before the game and noticing how much, you know, how many faceoffs Horkoff was taking in defensive zone faceoffs. And you know, sure enough, you know, defensive zone faceoff comes out, and who does Mac T throw over the boards? He throws it over Horkoff, and. Another, I think it was Brodziak, which I told the girl I was with. I was like, you watch, this is who he's going to put out. And then as soon as the faceoff's over, he's going to go to the bench. And that stuff, you can really see what the coaches are doing in a way that's hard to see when you just watch a game or if it's a team you're not familiar with. So the zone starts are big for me. And the other one I like is Corsi. I think it's useful to just understand where the puck tends to be when that player's on the ice.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think of qual comp, especially in a year like we're having now where Tom Rennie is rolling four lines more often than someone like McTavish?
Well, it's harder, you know, obviously it doesn't tell you a lot when you've got a circumstance like this. I tend to think it's better. I don't think it's great in terms of comparing players between teams.
Mm-hmm.
What I think it's very good for is telling you on any given team who the coach is matching up against the other team's best players. And, you know, this year it's hard because I don't know that it tells us a ton about the Oilers because, like you say, Rennie's been just sort of throwing them over the boards. But in general, I think it's a useful number.
This is Nation Radio on our Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. Alan Mitchell in conversation with Tyler Dello. Tyler, which organizations do you believe in the National Hockey League, if any, follow advanced stats or at least make decisions based on something similar to advanced stats?
I think there's been a lot of suspicion around San Jose doing it. I think it's something that's probably of more interest to the less financially strong teams. You know, it's cheaper than employing a body of scouts. You know, I would suspect that teams like San Jose, possibly Buffalo, maybe LA, teams like that. It wouldn't surprise me if Gillis in Vancouver. Because he strikes me as being a really detail-oriented, look-down-every-alley sort of guy. It wouldn't surprise me if he's doing something similar either.
It's funny you mentioned San Jose and Vancouver were the two teams that I've kind of identified in my own mind. Gillis, because he keeps making these small moves that are good bets. And then San Jose had convinced me they were doing it, and then they signed their goalie to a monstrous contract. What did you think of that deal?
Well, anyone who's read my site knows I'm not really wild about long deals for goaltenders these days because there are more goalies than there are jobs. So that's not, you know, it's probably not a deal I would have made. And, you know, it's a bit of a surprising deal. I'm surprised that anyone would sign a goalie for 4 years these days.
Yeah. With Penner gone, the Oilers have Hall and Pajarvi, the two famous gentlemen, as you mentioned earlier, with maybe Ryan Jones looking at a contract on the left side. Timo Hartikainen is in the minors as a kid in the Western League named Curtis Hamilton, playing well. He might get a look next fall. What would you recommend the Oilers do about that extra spot, the third or fourth left wing in front of Ryan Jones or just behind, moving forward? Is there a free agent out there, a Scotty Upshall, or do you think that's a position that Ryan Jones can fill?
Well, I suspect Ryan Jones is going to get the chance. You know, if you say to me, what do I think the Oilers should do with their third or fourth left wing, I don't know that it really matters that much until the guys at the top of the team can consistently play with the other team's top end.
Mm-hmm.
Because until then, they're going to be losing more games than they win. So, you know, when it comes to that third/fourth spot on the team, I just hope that they don't spend a lot of money locking somebody up for it who's going to be broken down by the time the boys at the top of the team can beat the other guys best more often than not.
I know I mentioned Qualcomm being difficult to measure with the Oilers this year. Hall is at the top of the Qualcomm list for left wings, even including Penner. But again, that's a random thing of rolling four lines. How long do you think it'll take somebody like Hall to be able to compete at the highest levels against the best players?
Well, he's obviously competing against them now. It's a question of how long will it take before he's beating them more often than not. I would hope maybe by the third year of his contract, he can start to be there. But it's by no means a sure thing. Patrick Kane isn't really somebody, at least as of last year. I haven't looked at him too closely this year, although I noticed the Hawks haven't done well. He isn't really somebody who was playing against the other team's best and dominating as of last year. And it's a tough thing to do for young guys. And where you've got a case like the Oilers, where they've basically eliminated another of the good older players, and Hamsky may well be gone by this time next year, you really are dependent on your young players to kind of push the team forward. And it's, you know, you say how long, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if it was 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Speaking of spending money, there was talk on this station and others this week about possibly just blue-skying an offer sheet to someone like Shea Weber. In your opinion, that's a terrible move at this point?
Well, it's now that they've kind of indicated they've moved Penner, you sort of wonder if Hemsky's going to be there. Maybe it is a terrible move. In theory, I'm not opposed to the idea of an offer sheet if you can identify when your team is kind of ready to make the leap from being a bad team to a middle of the road team.
Mm-hmm.
Because the picks you're going to be giving up then aren't that bad, and the player may well make a significant difference. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to the Oilers offer sheeting a so-called number one defenseman at some point. It's just a question of when do you do it, and you know, with the and the Oilers have some other problems, too, because they've got Javi Bulin signed for 2 years, so the goaltending's kind of going to be a mess for another 2 years. So, you know, this might not be the moment this summer, but I'm not opposed when it looks like the team is ready to kind of make the leap. I'm not opposed to using the offer sheet to try and add another part to help push them over the hump.
One more question, and then a personal question on your blog and your future. Taylor Hall, Hemsky, both injured this week. There's been a call on Team 1260, and I've read on some blogs as well, where people are saying, you know, the Oilers need more enforcers up front, more physical players, more McIntyres, more JF Jocks. In reading your stuff, I assume that you would disagree with that.
I think we've already got far too many JF Jocks. As far as McIntyre goes, you know, he's a great story. He's, you know, I'm sure he's a great guy. He can't get in the lineup, and when he's in the lineup, he doesn't play. And you know, unless McIntyre, you know, and I wouldn't expect anyone to do this because I think it'd be terrible. But unless he's going to start just, you know, going on the ice and assaulting people who hit the Oilers' young stars, I don't think it has much of a deterrent effect. And I don't think, you know, in Hall's case, Hall just decided to drop the gloves and fight somebody. And, you know, he said himself after the game, he doesn't want to always be defended. So I'm not sure that having more tough guys, more enforcers would have done anything. And, you know, you look at the team that every team in the NHL should aspire to be. They don't have guys out there who can't play hockey. This team doesn't need more tough guys. It needs more hockey players.
Tyler, I got an email this morning in regard to our interview today from RW in Red Deer, and he basically talks about how come there's so many lawyers in hockey. I'm going to turn that around and ask you a question about your blog. I know you work as a lawyer, working towards being a lawyer. Your blog has taken off because you've really done some great research, and then also because you've uncovered a story the mainstream media missed. Do you have a dream in terms of where you want to go with this, or is this just something you like to do on the side that is taking off a little?
It's probably the latter more than the former. You know, it's something that I do on the side, and you know, if something cool happens, something cool happens. It's, you know, you and I have been talking about hockey on the internet since 2002 or 2003, and if you think about the things that have happened to both of us since then, you're obviously a bit more of an established media figure before you started, but you're now doing a radio show, and you've carved quite the little niche for yourself in Edmonton. I have no idea what the future will bring from it. And I've had some interesting opportunities along the way. And, if there's anything else interesting that pops out of the blog, I'll be sure to enjoy it.
Tyler, thanks so much for this. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Alan. Have a good day.
You too. Tyler Dello from MC79, a very good blog. If you've never been there before, zip by. You have to have an open mind, and you really do have to use your brain, because it's not a quick trip through a blog post from Tyler Dello. But there's interesting things there, and he will change your mind. Got word that Gilbert Brulé will not dress tonight. That's probably the second half of the reason why Alex Giroux was recalled earlier today. He'll be in Colorado in time for tonight's game against Denver. Giroux's interesting. He was signed in the offseason, and there seemed to be an implied promise that he would play a little bit at the NHL level, and that's certainly going to happen in the last 17 or so games, because he is up second overall in scoring with 65 points in 61 games for the Oklahoma City Barons, and he will be a member of the Edmonton Oilers as of tonight. On the way, we'll talk to J.P. Hornstra from the Los Angeles Daily News.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are back with a lineup announcement. Ribs put this on my blog. Oilers tweet lineup. It's Pajärvi with Horkoff and Eberle. Ryan Jones with Gagné and Omark. And I believe Giroux is 12. Called up from the AHL today. He'll be playing with Liam Radix and Andrew Cagliano. And then the fourth line will be Jacques with Fraser and McIntyre. And that's as of maybe 15 minutes ago or so. So that's the lineup looking forward to tonight. This is Nation Radio on Team 1260, and we're joined by J.P. Hornstra from the Los Angeles Daily News. Hi, J.P.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. I was watching the first game with Penner in the lineup. That's a lot of meat and lumber going down the ice, those three.
Yeah, it certainly is. The Kings have decided to go big, and they've decided to go big quickly. I mean, if you think about the last two guys that they had in that spot, Marco Sturm, kind of a smaller, quicker guy, at least when he's healthy, and Brad Richardson, again, another smaller, quicker guy when he's healthy. But with Penner, they've pretty much conceded that we're going to win games by grinding out, cycling the puck, not even going to try to out-skate teams here. We're just going to try to out-muscle them around the net.
Kopitar is such a gifted hockey player. They've had a hard time finding a fit for him, haven't they?
Oh, a very hard time. Terry Murray said about a month ago that it's the hardest thing that he's had to do when filling out the lineup as a coach since he got here. It's consistently been a challenge for him, and they just haven't found a good fit, and they've brought in several people to try to be that fit, so they kind of need Penner to work here if you think about the fact that this team has expectations of getting past the first round this year. They need Penner to work.
JP, I know it's early, but what's the fan reaction to the trade been?
Oh, they've been excited. It is a little bit early, and I think there's a little bit of, you know, what can you do for me now that you're here? But it generated some excitement. I mean, there was a lot of pressure from the fans on Dean Lombardi to make a move, and he made a move, arguably the biggest one on trade deadline day. And you know, certainly the excitement value is there. Obviously, like you said, now they want to see Penner get the results.
I read an article that you wrote where Lombardi said that it was more of a reward to the players, but I know a lot of people, as you just mentioned, the feet were through the fire for Lombardi. Is it a case of both being true, or is it more pressure than the other?
Well, you know, there was some pretty serious ups and downs this season. I mean, the Kings had a very, very poor month of January. They also had another poor stretch at the end of November where it looked like they might not make the playoffs, and there were some serious questions there. So they really had to turn it around. They turned it around with a great road trip. They went out away from home for 10 straight games, and I think won 8 of them. And that was sort of a turning point. So I think that was kind of a turning point, not just in the fans' mind, but in Lombardi's mind, that he should go out and get somebody.
The Kings, compared to the other teams in the Western Conference, have a I'm not going to say a very easy schedule, but a fairly easy schedule. Is there a number they're trying to reach in terms of reaching the top eight? Do they want to get to fourth or fifth, or is it just a matter of getting in the playoffs?
I think it's just a matter of getting in the playoffs. And to be honest with you, if there were a number at the beginning of the season, they would have had to throw it out because it's so hard to predict. When we say a number, I'm talking about a number of points here. It might take 100 points to get in. It's the one thing that every coach can be guaranteed to ask if he's coaching a Western Conference team is, can you believe the standings right now? I think any team would be happy to get in if you're not, at this point, Vancouver, Detroit, or San Jose.
On trade deadline day, Pierre LeBrun tweeted that the Kings never spoke to Dallas but did kick the tires on David Booth before finally settling on Dustin Penner. Did you hear that as well?
I kind of reached around to a couple people to try to find out about that, how serious the interest was. And kicking the tires might be pretty appropriate. I don't know if they necessarily even got past that stage. So there might have been some interest, but probably not as much as there was in Penner. And I think Alishamsky was right behind Penner.
Early in the week, and actually the week before the trade deadline, and then up until maybe Saturday or so, we were hearing Hemsky as a strong possibility. And then there was a drop-dead prospect, and that was Shen, that the Oilers would not accept a trade for. They were going hard for Hemsky, though, and the breaking point was Shen. Is that correct?
I'm 99% certain that's correct. I mean, you kind of have to put two and two together in that case. Basically, you know, Tambellini said that he was never bowled over for Hemsky, and Lombardi said he was never bowled over for Shen. He said he was never going to get rid of Shen. In fact, I was hearing that they were after Hemsky as late as Sunday, but Lombardi said later that it was about Sunday night that he realized that he was not going to be able to pry Al Hemsky away from Edmonton.
Is there a sense, and I know you do some stuff with the Ducks too, so maybe you can use the background when they went to the finals and won it. Is there a sense that this is the LA Kings year or could be their year?
The latter. I would say there's a sense that it could be their year. Like I said, there were those couple dry spells that sort of put doubt into the team's mind, or rather into the fans' mind, that, you know, it's a pretty fragile situation out west. On the one hand, there are so many teams in the race, and the Kings are kind of in the middle of it. It's going to take a strong push to the finish here to really, I think, start convincing people again that this is the year. Before the season, it was seen as a possibility, and now that they're starting to make their way up, their climb toward the top, I think they're going to have to push San Jose for that number one spot in the Pacific Division first before maybe the fan base is completely sold that this is the biggest opening in the cup window, so to speak.
This is Nation Radio and Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. Alan Mitchell along with J.P. Hornstra from the Los Angeles Daily News. Was Colton Tubert highly regarded in the L.A. organization? I know they've got a ton of good defensemen. Was he a guy I know they drafted him highly, but had he fallen down the depth chart?
Yeah, I think that would be fair to say. I remember when Tubert got here, the talk was that they were comparing him to a possible Chris Pronger. Well, when he was traded a week ago, Dean Lombardi said that he projected to be more like a Matt Green. Mm-hmm. Now, Matt Green is a perfectly fine NHL defenseman. You guys have seen him up there in Edmonton, but he's no Chris Pronger. Now, I don't know if that expectation was fair for Tubert to begin with. I've seen him play quite often in training camp a couple years ago and then again in the ECHL when he got called up. And I don't see him projecting as an offensive player in the NHL, quite simply. So, you know, the Edmonton Oilers got a good prospect, don't get me wrong, but he's probably going to be more of a second or third pair defenseman if and when he reaches the NHL.
I've read the Matt Green comparison a lot, but the size of Green. Green is a big man. He's thicker. Is a Jason Smith, I don't know if you remember Jason Smith, but he was an Oiler for years and played in Ottawa as well and Philadelphia. He was a tall guy, but a little bit thinner than a Matt Green type. Is that a better comparison, or is Tubert thick as well?
Tubert is not thick right now. He's strong, but he's not Matt Green strong. As you get older, you can tend to get bigger and work on that, and I think the sort of subtext to that is that they are hoping that Tubert will get bigger and will get a little bit stronger, put some muscle on his frame. I didn't watch Jason Smith play personally, so I can't speak to that one, but Tubert should probably add some muscle. Let's put it that way.
One of the things that we did while we were waiting around for this Alex Hemsky trade that turned into the Dustin Penner trade, we had a good long look at the Los Angeles Kings depth chart and their prospects. And this kid Voinov is a gifted offensive player. Have you seen him? Can he play defensively? And if he can, why isn't he already in the Los Angeles organization or Los Angeles with the Kings?
Well, I think even if he could play defensively at a first-rate NHL level, he would still be kind of stuck because he's the same type of player as Drew Doughty and Jack Johnson. Offensively, he can skate, he can do things with the puck, he can be creative, he can get shots through to the net. He's a top-pair guy, at least that's what he projects to, certainly in the NHL, and that's what he is right now in the AHL. He's one of the best offensive defensemen, if not the best, right now at the moment. I haven't seen him enough to comment on his defensive skills, and even if I could, it would have been in training camp against, you know, who knows, they're throwing him out there against in exhibition games. But I feel sympathy for Voinov. I think if in any other NHL organization, he might have had a cup of coffee by now. But with Drew Doughty and Jack Johnson, with the 1 and 2 positions here in Los Angeles, that just hasn't happened for him yet.
Do you think it would have been a deal breaker? Say the Oilers wanted the first round pick and then the conditional pick they also got, but instead of Tubert, they wanted Voinov. Would that have been a deal breaker, or would that have been possible in your opinion?
My opinion, and my opinion is not based on hearing a lot of that, but I would say no, that would not be a deal breaker personally. Again, I think if Dean Lombardi is taking accurate stock of his organizational depth at that position, you know, he's going to try to get Drew Doughty locked up here for this, hopefully, what he hopes will be a long-term contract. He already signed Jack Johnson to an extension earlier this season. If those guys are around, there's not going to be much room for Voinov to play here. So I that shouldn't have been a deal breaker. I think that's probably going to be my most accurate answer.
Okay, cool. I appreciate that because Voinov is a guy that we looked at, you know, closely as fans, and we were wondering about. Dean Lombardi does not throw first round picks around in trade very often. Was it difficult for him to move that pick, in your opinion?
I think it was. I think you have to again go back to the statement that he thinks the players earned it. That the players earned the right to for him to go out on a little bit of a limb there with moving that pick. And I think he was hoping to have been there at this point. You know, he talks often about how he didn't really like rebuilding from the standpoint of making his present team, his present NHL roster worse. And that's what he had to do for his first 2 or 3 years here. And I think he was kind of looking forward to the time where he could give up a first-round draft pick. So hopefully from his standpoint, he's going to be comfortable with it here because teams are going to keep asking for those early round picks if the Kings keep pushing farther and farther in the playoffs.
Yeah, the LA Kings look good this year. They're, in my opinion, they're one of the best Kings teams ever, and I think they have a real shot at it because they are deep and they're strong and they're a talented group. Do you cover the ECHL in California at all?
Yeah, I see quite a bit of ECHL hockey down here. The Kings have their ECHL affiliate playing about an hour east in a suburb of Ontario, and that's where I saw Tubert, actually.
Mm-hmm.
There are 2 other teams here in California right now. There used to be 3 other teams in California. The Fresno Falcons folded a couple years ago, but it's got a presence, let's say that.
Well, Oiler fans follow because the Stockton Thunder have seen a few Oiler prospects go through there. Devin Dubnyk, who's in goal for the Oilers, hopefully tonight, and Liam Reddick's played there as well. Have you seen Stockton this year?
I have seen Sachin this year quite a bit, and I remember Dubnyk quite well from a couple seasons ago.
Right.
Sachin has a dual affiliation. They also have San Jose Sharks prospects coming in there. So I would say they're one of the more talented teams, actually, of the California teams in the ECHL.
What about Jordan Benfield? Do you remember him at all? And I know I'm putting you on the spot here. It's not like you can pull a guy out of a roster, but he's played down there for Stockton this year, and he's an Oiler draft pick from a few years ago, and he's played a little bit in the AHL as well. Do you recall any players standing out in Benfield specifically?
Benfield, to me, and again, this isn't going on too much data here, but the couple times that I saw him, he was always involved in the play. He was the guy who had the puck a lot, either on his stick or around him. Definitely stood out to me in the couple times that I saw him, but again, that's against ECHL players, and you never know how a guy with offensive skills in the ECHL might project as he moves up the hockey chain. But obviously, he's moved up, so good for him.
Yeah, and I'm going to be an ECHL fan forever because of the Bakersfield Condors are holding a Charlie Sheen night next Saturday. Have you heard about that?
I haven't heard about that, but you know what? It doesn't surprise me.
They say bring a clean blood test and you can get in for free. I love
that. Well, that ought to pack them in, I think.
JP, thanks very much for being with us today.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
All right. That's JP Hornstra from the Los Angeles Daily News. Interesting guy. Covers a lot of different leagues in the Southern California area. I forgot to ask him about the weather, but it probably would have just depressed me anyway. A couple of emails coming in. This is from Jesse. I'm listening today, and I was wondering if I can find podcasts of your first shows, and we have them. They're up. They are on OilersNation.com. Wanye finally woke up from his winter nap, and the first two editions are on there for sure. So the third show and this one I can't comment on, but the first two are actually up, and I want to thank Wanye because I know it was a lot of work, and he works like three-hour days, so it doesn't get a lot done, but he's finally there. Also from Al Bolin. Al says, do you have a theory on why the Oilers players the past two or so years seem to be suffering an unusual amount of injuries, especially injuries to key players? Is it the way they play or lack of conditioning? Well, I know it's not lack of conditioning because the tests that they go through in training camp they boggle the mind. So I think it's just a matter of a lot of bad luck. And in all honesty, people like Sheldon Surrey, when they were signed, they had a little bit of a history of injury. Nikolai Habibulin had some problems. So when you're signing veteran free agents, especially once they're past 30, you're a little bit prone to that. The Taylor Hall injury was a fluke thing. I don't think anybody he's just a young guy. He got injured and it was one of those one-off things. Alex Hemsky also is getting a longer and longer list of injuries, and that might affect his trade value as we move forward. So I think it's a matter of signing some veterans earlier on before the rebuild started, and we're also seeing somebody like Alex Hemsky building on a rather large resume of injuries. This is Nation Radio on Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. I'm Alan Mitchell. We've got a big, big show still to come. Jason Greger coming up at the top of the hour. And coming up next, we're going to be talking to Kent Simpson right after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
And we have a roster update for you from the Oilers. They have recalled Alex Giroux, second overall in scoring in the AHL, 65 points in 61 games for tonight's game in Colorado. And Gilbert Brulé will not play tonight. So that's about an hour old in terms of information. Coming up in the next hour, we have Jason Greger. We're also going to be talking a little bit more about Colton Tubert and giving you an idea, a thumbnail sketch about what he is as a player. And speaking of that, we're going to get some insight on that and more from Team 1260 analyst Kent Simpson. Welcome to the show, Kent.
Hey, Al. How you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for... Were you busy doing something important that we've ripped you away from, or...?
Not at all. I'm just juggling a couple kids. There's a few of them swinging from the ceiling fan right about now, but it's all good.
Well, if we hear a crash and you hang up, we'll understand. Oil Kings won in a shootout last night. They're so close to making the playoffs, right? Like, it's almost done.
Yeah, I think that it would be a colossal collapse if they ended up not making the playoffs. I mean, Lethbridge is quite a ways back now, and I think it's safe to say the Oil Kings are going to make it. Really, it's now just a race for sixth or seventh. They're 1 point up on Brandon in sixth place, but I'll tell you what, that Wheat Kings team is playing some pretty good hockey right now. So the Oil Kings obviously hold their own destiny. They got a pretty tough schedule the remainder of the way.
So they'd rather play Kootenay than Medicine Hat. Is that a fair comment?
You know what? They've had tough times against both teams. You know, last night the victory in the shootout against Medicine Hat was the first win this season over either of those teams. So you know, it's really you know, choose your own fate. But you know, I think if they continue to play like they are, they're playing pretty good hockey right now. If they continue to play like that, they should be pretty confident going into the playoffs. And whoever they match up against, I'm sure they'll give them a good fight.
Kent, the WHL has some real powerhouse teams this year. I know a team like Saskatoon or Portland. Those guys are loaded. How far do you think the Oil Kings can go in the playoffs, realistically?
You know, I mean, realistically, I mean, the one thing about junior hockey is you know, nothing surprises you. The things that I've seen, you know, in the 4 years doing the in-game analyst for the Oil Kings, I mean, it's just incredible. So, you know, to think that the Oil Kings could upset in the first round, certainly within the realm of possibility. If they get to the, you know, get to the second round and are riding a wave of confidence, who knows? I mean, you know, certainly the odds are stacked against them. You know, when you take a look at a Saskatoon that, I mean, they are just a juggernaut. You saw what they did on Wednesday here in town, go down 4-2 after the first period and come back with an 8-5 victory. So certainly they're quite a powerhouse, but like I said, anything can happen in this league.
The Pipeline Show guys were talking about Reinhardt possibly being back for the playoffs. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know what? I had the good fortune of having a chat with Griffin last night. I guess his broken wrist has been responding very well to the treatment. It looks like things are healing very, very well. From all accounts, he's going to start skating pretty soon. I don't think he's going to have a stick in his hand or anything, but probably for a couple weeks, and then you know, maybe be back kind of for the start of the playoffs if all goes well.
And the Oil Kings are in the Hat tonight, is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Home and home, so they all piled up on the bus after the game last night here in town. Drove 5 hours, probably got into to Medicine Hat probably around 4 in the morning, and they're going to lace him up tonight, so such as junior hockey.
Yeah, well, while we have you here, I might want to ask you a few things about some Oiler draft picks who are in the Western League, and we'll maybe start with Tyler Pitlick. I know he's lost to a broken ankle for the Tigers for the rest of the season. His numbers started slowly, but he's really improved maybe after Christmas time. What do you think of his game?
Really like his game, and I'll tell you what, it's probably magnified because, man, did he ever play well against the Oil Kings. In the four games that he was healthy that played, I think he had 10 points in those four games. And like you said, I think it was an adjustment period. I mean, it's always difficult for NCAA guys to come back and play junior hockey. I think they, you know, kind of think it's going to be pretty easy. They step in and it's suddenly a different game, and they, you know, it takes maybe a month or two of adjustment process. Now he adapted pretty quickly. The other thing is he was playing very, very well alongside Lyndon Vay, of course, the leading scorer in the whole league. So I'm sure as sad as Pitlick was to be out for the rest of the regular season, there is still hope he might come back for the playoffs. I'm sure Lyndon Vay is crushed too, because those guys had some pretty good chemistry.
Curtis Hamilton, I saw a little bit on the Shaw game last night, just a few minutes. He's not playing, I don't think, as much as he was earlier in the year because they're such a powerhouse. But he's playing with Braden Shannon. He is, you know, he's kicking arse as far as points are concerned. Is he a guy that you see moving to the AHL next year, spending a year or two there, and then making a shot at the NHL?
Certainly. I could certainly see him pegged, you know, in Oklahoma City next year. I mean, the one thing that Curtis Hamilton's got going for him is he's got size. So he's a young kid, but he's got the size and, you know, a mature body. So he's going to be a guy that I think will adapt well to the minors. And, you know, a player like that, you know, is going to take some time. I mean, you know, I'm sure the big club, you know, has him targeted with the slow, you know, the slow scenic route towards the NHL. He's certainly not going to be fast-tracked, and not until he's ready. So, you know, if it takes 2 or 3 years in the minors, getting lots of power play time, getting him lots of, you know, first or second line minutes, and then maybe, you know, depending on how his progress goes, then maybe he makes the jump. But, you know, he's a guy that's got all the tools, and, you know, he and Braden Shen have meshed pretty well together ever since Shen came across from Brandon. So, you know, he's a guy that I think, you know, in a few years down the road will certainly make some noise at some other training camps.
Yeah, and speaking of making noise, how far is Martin Marinson away from making noise with the Oilers?
Oh, man, I like this guy. I really like this guy. You know, he reminds me of a Tyler Myers. And, you know, you go back to the year that Shen and Myers were drafted, and you know, Shen ends up making the Toronto Maple Leafs. Myers goes back to Kelowna. Well, that was so huge for Myers' progress. He's the number one defenseman. He's playing on the number one power play unit with Tyson Barrie. He gets to work on his stick handling, his poise, all those sorts of things, and then he makes the jump to Buffalo and just looks incredible. I can see the same kind of thing from this Martin Marincin. He's a big, big guy, very good at stick handling. He's a pretty darn good skater. He's got his head up, makes great outlet passes, and he's got a heck of a shot, too. So this is a guy that Oilers fans, I would think that he might within the next 2 to 3 years get some ice time on the top six of the Oilers for sure, because this guy's future is pretty bright.
That's good to hear. Before we move off the prospects and onto another subject, just a quick note on the two Oiler kids, Christian Pelss and Cameron Abney.
Well, Christian Pelss, I got to tell you, and you know, it's so easy to forget, and I'm guilty of this too, but you know, here's a kid from Latvia. He comes over here, and he's never been to Canada before. He doesn't know the language, and the first few months he struggles on the ice, and you're kind of wondering, oh geez, you know, the Oilers draft this kid, what's going on? But for a second, take a step back and just realize how difficult that would be. You don't know a single person. You're living in a stranger's home. You know, you're trying to go to school and learn, with a language you have no idea. There's so many other things outside of hockey. And I tell you what, for the last 2 months, this guy has been, he's been incredible. He's been playing with Michael St. Croix and more recently Dylan Ruck. And I would go on a limb and say he's probably one of the top five fastest skaters in the league. When this guy gets going, man, he can just fly. So, I think he's starting to get more and more, comfortable, some more confidence. He's realizing what he can and can't do on the ice. And, I think going forward next year, after he has a year under his belt, certainly he'll be one to watch. Cam Abney is, for me, he's a little bit different. I mean, he's such a big guy. And, he always wants, leaves me wanting more. Now, one thing about Cam Abney is he's had a very bad hand for the whole year, which has limited him. He hasn't been able to fight as probably much as he'd like to. Let's not make a mistake here. This is one tough customer. I mean, it is known throughout the league. But what I'd love to see more from him is just engage a little bit, with the opponent. Not necessarily with, a hit, maybe not necessarily dropping the gloves, but, get in their faces, intimidate, maybe, talk to the guys a little bit, skate by, a defenseman after whistle and have a little word with him. Just so guys are thinking in the back of their mind, ooh, this Cam Abney, I'm not too sure I want to, tick him off. So, that whole enforcer role, it's a tough role. So he's still developing into it. And obviously he's got the size and strength to go to the next level.
Speaking of brawn and size and handling yourself, you saw Colton Tubert when he was playing in Regina, right?
I did, yeah, I did, and I like this move for the Oilers. I mean, obviously, I won't get into the whole debate. I think that's happened enough on talk radio for the past week. But if you just look at the asset that they're bringing back in terms of the player and Colton Tubert, he's a guy that has great experience. He's played for Team Canada at the World Juniors. He's a big, strong guy. He's a good skater. And I know he did take a little heat, I think as an 18-year-old, might have spoke a little too soon when he, kind of mentioned to his junior club, oh, I'm not going to be here next year, I'm going to be in Los Angeles. And I think he quickly got to his wrist slap for that. And, that's to be expected, 18-year-old kids say some silly things once in a while. So I don't think, anyone can hold a comment like that against him. But this guy has got a bright future. And I hear people saying, if he can be a Matt Green or a Jason Smith, that's a great thing. Well, you know what? I think he could even be better than those guys. He does have the raw tools to be better than those guys.
Well, that's good to hear. Quickly now, because we're coming up against the clock here, but you played for Tom Reddy. Was it Team Canada or was it at the U of A?
Yeah, no, that would have been a Team Canada, 99-2000.
Okay. What kind of a coach? Is he a button-down coach or is he more of an emotional coach?
You know what? He is, I'll tell you what, he's a little bit of everything. And I think that's what makes him such a great coach. Certainly the best coach that I've ever had. I've got the utmost respect for Tom. I think that the biggest thing about Tom is he is so passionate about the game. He's passionate about the game, but he's also passionate about his players. You get the feeling that he really, really cares for you. And when he comes into the dressing room, whether it's before a game or, even if it's during practice and he's talking to you, you get the impression that, he is out there. He wants to make sure that you are improving and as a team you guys improve. And as a result, you want to do it for him. And, you know, I remember distinctly. I mean, you know, we'd go over to Europe for, you know, kind of 3-4 weeks long, and I tell you what, there would be some just grind of a days where you'd, you know, have to, you know, bus for, you know, several hours and catch a plane and then bus again, and next thing you know, you're in, you know, some freezing cold arena in Slovakia, and you know, obviously you're motivated to play because you're playing for Team Canada, but you're tired, and Tom would come into the room and, you know, everyone would just buy in. He'd just give you a few words of motivation, and you wanted to do it for him, you wanted to do it for the jersey, you wanted to do it for the guy next to you. So he's a very passionate guy, but not only that, I mean, he is very good systems-wise. I mean, he knows the game of hockey inside and out. So I might be sugarcoating it here, but I honestly cannot say enough about Tom Rennie.
All right. Well, you know what, Ken? Thanks so much for this, and we're going to have you back again soon.
Thanks, Al. You take care, and have a great weekend, buddy.
All right. That's Ken Simpson, Team 1260 analyst, who's going to be busy through the spring because he said it. The Oil Kings are going to make the playoffs, and they're going to have a good run. All right. This is Nation Radio. Coming up, Jason Greger.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Brought to you by the fine Oodle Noodle and OilersNation.com. You can email us today at nationradio@theteam1260.com. A couple of emails just came in. This from Speeds. A couple of things to ponder. What would you say to the idea that if Edmonton is throwing away next season anyway, they really should have dealt Hemsky as well as Penner at this year's deadline? Well, bottom line is they probably tried. And then he says another really good point. Given the return received for Penner, do you think the Oilers might have been better off long-term to take both to L.A. for Shen in a first instead of Penner alone for Tubert in a first? Obviously, it assumes that L.A. would make that deal. And I think that's right there, Speeds. I don't know that the Kings would have gotten off of the Braden Shen. I just think they really wanted him to keep him. Pardon me. Summit says, I don't understand the move with Oklahoma City in the playoff battle. Wouldn't it be more prudent to leave Alex Drew there and help the team make the playoffs? Frankly, I think we were better off calling up somebody like Cornette or Hardy Kanin. Well, I think the bottom line is the Oilers are in real trouble. They traded Penner, they lost Hemsky, and they lost Hall. And that's a lot to give up on any NHL team. Those are three very talented people. Giroux's the best player available. You call him up, and then maybe you send him back down for some of the minor league games later on in the week. That's my feeling on the issue anyway. We are joined now by Jason Greger. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. You? Well, the other reason they called up Giroux is they have to have 12 forwards in the lineup. Gilbert Brule is not playing tonight again.
Is that an injury, or what's going on there?
Once again, I don't think it's an injury. They're not really sure. They're being pretty hush-hush on. I'm not sure if he's got a... I don't like to speculate on health issues. Injuries are a little bit different if it's a knee or a shoulder, but I think it's more of an ailment than an injury. How about that?
Okay, sounds good. You had an article up on Oilers Nation the night Taylor Hall got injured, and I thought it was excellent. It really spoke to the fact that this guy is the real deal. He manned up on Thursday night.
I was impressed by Hall and the fact that, and not really surprised, because I'd had a conversation in the locker room about a week earlier, because I just noticed that, you know, a lot of teams were giving him sticks, and every now and then I was surprised he fought Dorsett, I'll be frank about that, but I thought at some point he was going to kind of stand up a little bit more for himself, whether it's, you know, get his stick up a little bit more, because he'd been taking a lot of shots from players, which I understand because he carries the puck a lot, and that's going to happen, and it's always going to happen, but every now and then you got to give a few back rather than always receive it. And obviously he was frustrated, and you know the end result isn't what anybody wanted. Of course, I don't think the Oilers and Hall or and definitely not the fans wanted to watch the final 17 games without Hall, because I think there was a lot of fans that were holding on to the hope of, hey, we might have a Calder Trophy winner for the first time in franchise history, and that's obviously out the window now. But I didn't have a problem with Taylor Hall fighting. I think it's part of the game. We've seen a lot of the superstars, a lot of the best players in the game drop their gloves once a year. Crosby's averaged one fight a year in his career, so I don't think it's... Now, the difference is Crosby's never fought Dorsett, so you know Hall next time might probably be a little bit smarter with who his dance partner is.
My feeling is that he's always going to be, or at least he will become, a player who is able to look after himself. I'm not saying he's going to be a fighter, but he is going to have a little bit of that edge to him, and he's going to be able to look after himself a little bit. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, he skates so well. And, you know, what led to that whole play was the hit on Matt Calvert, right? And I expect Hall to be more physical. Just because he's such a good skater, he can close the gap and get in guys and forecheck, and he'll be physical. Like, Taylor Hall, you know, he's 195 pounds at 19, and he's got a lot of room to fill out. I would not be surprised that
over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, this is a guy who maybe gains, you know, a few pounds every summer and slowly bulks up, and wouldn't be surprised to see him over 200 pounds by next year. You know, his body type and everything, Simon Bennett, you know, they do tests and they understand the genetic features of certain guys, and where, you know, some guys you don't want to gain too much weight because they'll, you know, they might lose a step. Hall's a guy who they think has a lot of room to kind of fill out and move. So I think he'll be over 200 pounds, and that's going to make him even more of a bull on the ice.
Going back to the Boston game, I was at the Boston game, and Hall was called for a penalty. He was hit in the middle in the neutral zone, ended up on the boards by the bench, and then he was called for an interference penalty on the young Kempfer, the Boston defenseman, later on in that shift. And there was some frustration there, and it seems as though there have been a few times when he's been that way. Do you think this the injury is kind of a lesson? Don't let that frustration get out of hand, and don't go fight a guy like Dorsett.
Yeah, that's one thing I know, you know, we've been debating a little bit, that does this open up the door for people maybe to think they can get Taylor Hall off his game? And I don't really believe that. It's a one-time thing, and in 65 games he fought once, and you know, how many times has he really retaliated? You're right, that Boston game, they frustrated him, and that's maybe the biggest team in the NHL,
yeah.
Right? And so I don't know if that's the norm either, but it is something that you'll learn. And, you know, it was no different than, you know, Sidney Crosby. Remember his first few years, people thought he was, quote, a whiner because, you know, he's a star guy and he was getting harassed and mugged a little bit, and no one really talks about that now. I think it's all part of the learning process for a young, skilled player. And I expect Hall to adapt his game accordingly over the next few years.
So if, let's say, because I've been looking at Landeskog, and he is a heck of a player, and he does have some grit to him. He's got a nice range of skills. Do you think it's possible to possibly draft somebody like Landeskog, maybe look at Hall at center, or possibly trade a Gagne in a pick to get a big center?
Well, it's a little surprising that Tom Rennie, after he played Taylor Hall at center for 5 games, Horkoff came back and he said the experiment at center isn't over. Now, we hadn't seen that since. I'm not saying we wouldn't have seen it here down the final 17 games, but we obviously won't now. And, you know, I didn't mind Hall at center. Obviously, face-offs were somewhat of an issue, but you know what? It wasn't that much worse than the other guys they've already got. So I think he could probably learn that. Hall skates well enough. That's definitely an option you can look at. You know, Sam Gagne is one that is probably going to be one of the best debates. Do you trade Sam Gagne? And if you could get a bigger centerman, then I would trade Sam Gagne, because you can't have all small centers. That's a fact. So if you could get Gagne for a center with size, mm-hmm. then yeah, and a pick, like a pick going with Gagne, yeah, you're right. I would consider that, strictly because, and Gagne might go elsewhere and score 65 or 70 and maybe 75 points. Who knows? And people might criticize that, but the reality is, if this organization is going to evolve, they have to get some different parts. And they've got too many of the same parts. They've got a lot of small forwards, a lot of them aren't overly aggressive, and right now, a lot of them don't score enough points to let you overlook the fact that they're small.
This is Nation Radio on Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. Alan Mitchell talking to Jason Greger. Jason, you had a wicked reaction and assessment of the Dustin Penner deal. Can you repeat that here?
Well, for me, I wasn't a big fan of it at all. And probably because I'd done a lot of research on the value of draft picks. And, you know, Tubert, I get that this organization needed another physical defenseman. But when you look at the value of a 30-goal scorer, Penner last season was in the top 15 in goal scorers in the NHL. So it's not like they grow on trees to replace him. And while the Oilers have the Kings' first-round pick, I get that. Who knows? That might be a mid-20 pick. And you look at the history, a mid-20, then yes. Stu McGregor, I know lately he's been phenomenal at what he's done, but the reality is, even if he gets a good pick, it's going to take, what, 3, 4, 5 years maybe before that guy becomes a 30-goal scorer. In the meantime, how is the rest of your organization developed? I understand why they made the trade. I don't like the trade. I don't think they win that trade. I think at bare minimum, it might be a break-even point. Tubert's not going to play here next year. And by the time he becomes an impact defenseman, realistically, is another 3 or 4 years. So unless the organization overlooked everything in their team and said, you know what, we realistically aren't at least 4 years away to be competitive, then I guess I understand it. But that's the only reason, is if the organization, and they'll never publicly say it, but everything points to them thinking they are 4 years away by the time Tubert competitive, and by the time that L.A. first rounder becomes something. And I know everybody says, well, hey, they can take that first rounder and then package it up with something and get into the top 10 and have two top 10 picks. Well, the reality is, if the Kings, if that's a 16 or a 17, maybe. But if it's a 23, you're not going to move a 23 and something to get into the top 10 unless it's Alashamsky, and that might be too much to give up. Right? I don't even know if Sam Gagner in a 23rd would get you into the top 10. I really don't think it would.
And I agree with you. That's a trade you're going to have to give up something really good to get into the top 10. But you brought a great point there, because on Hockey Day in Canada, Kevin Lowe said something along the lines of the rebuild to compete for a Stanley Cup is 4 to 6 years from like now. And I was very surprised by that because I hadn't heard that before. But the Dustin Penner deal, doesn't the Dustin Penner deal imply that the first day of the rebuild was the Taylor Hall draft, not previous to that?
Yeah, I agree, Alan. It does. And that really sucks for Oilers fans. Like, it really does. Because, you know, like, it was, everybody talked about the Chicago model. And I said, hey, just remember, if you want the Chicago model, they made the playoffs once in 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and really, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews were the last two pieces of the puzzle. Not the first two, the last two. So, you know, if you look at it, if it starts with Taylor Hall, then this year's pick, whoever it's going to be, next year's pick, you know, they've got a lot of their second and third rounders will need to pan out for it to maybe speed up a little bit. And the reality is you're probably 3 years away at best, maybe from at least being a playoff team, for goodness sakes. Like, right. Oilers fans right now would probably beg and plead and donate $100 each just to see a playoff game, because now this is year five again. And right now at this point, I don't know many fans who realistically think this team could make the playoffs next year. Sure,
no.
There are surprises every year in the NHL. So maybe the Oilers shock the world and next year are in the running for the playoffs. But realistically right now, unless Steve Tambellini can acquire five players, and I'm talking five NHL players somehow over the summer, I don't see this team being competitive in the playoffs next year.
And that's not reasonable. Five players in one summer who can actually contribute in our NHL
players. I'm not talking your 11th and 12th forward and your 5th and 6th defenseman.
Yes.
Right? Like, so we'll see. And Steve Tambellini has shown he's a very patient guy, almost too patient for some fans, and I understand that. So I would be surprised if all of a sudden in the free agent market, which between now and July 1st is going to change drastically as far as who's actually going to be a free agent, and then how many of them, you know, the only advantage the Oilers have is if they want to, they could overpay for some guys on two-year contracts this summer. It wouldn't be that hard at all, because they've got tons of cap space by getting rid of Dustin Penner. They'll probably buy out Sheldon Surrey, I would think. They'd have oodles of cap space. Taylor Hall and Pay-Arvey and Everly don't come up for two more years. So they would have that option if they wanted to, you know, overpay some guys on a two-year contract if need be. They could do it, but something tells me they might overpay a guy, Alan, who's, let's say, is a $1.7 million player. They might pay him $2.2 for 2 years because it's really not going to hurt their bottom line.
The Oilers, CapGeek has the Oilers at 36.6 on an assumed $60 million cap. There's room there to sign a Shea Weber to an offer sheet. Is that an option, or is that just blue skying?
Well, you know what, Alan? If they keep it under, I looked it up the other day, and I'm pretty sure my math is right. If they keep it under 6.1, and that would, let's say they sign him for an 8-year deal at $6 million a year, they still only have to give up a first, second, and a third. You don't have to give up two firsts unless you go over $6.1 million. So, you know, if Duncan Keith is a 5.5 cap hit for the next decade, is Shea Weber worth that much more, realistically?
Yeah. No.
Probably not.
Yeah.
So with the cap keep, you know, going up, we might see more RFA offers for a guy like Shea Weber, because now Nashville, on the other hand, would they match it? You know, I had Paul Fenton, their assistant GM, on, and he says, hey, it's a big misconception. We probably have more money than people think. We just spend it wisely. They know what Shea Weber means to that organization. He's Mr. Nashville. All the fans know him. He's their main guy. And as great as they are at developing defensemen, it's not like Shea Weber's come across the, you know, their draft table every day. So you could make the offer sheet. If Buffalo matched Vanek, something tells me, you know, Nashville would want to match Shea Weber. And unless you were said, okay, we're going to offer him 7.5, but if you do that, now you're into two first-rounders. And, well, as good as Shea Weber is, not, you know, they, this team is still, I think, eight players away from being a competitive team. He would be one great one, and he would give you a bona fide number one defenseman that would solve a lot of problems, and he stays healthy for the most part. But that would be pretty risky. You know, if you can get him, if you can sign him to a $6 million offer sheet and somehow Nashville decides they can't afford it, well, you know what? Giving up a first, second, and a third, look in hindsight on what you gave up for Dustin Penner, it really didn't come back to haunt you. You know, the Oilers, based on what, I only base it on the Anaheim picks. I know that at number 12, the pick the Oilers technically had was Tyler Myers, but it wasn't Anaheim. Anaheim had traded that pick away. So,
Jason, thanks for this.
Hey, anytime, Al.
All right, bud. That's Jason Greger. Of course, you can listen to him every weekday right here on Team 1260. The guy gets more airtime than anybody. That's my belief. And it's because he's good. That was a good conversation. I enjoyed that very much. Now, coming up before the top of the hour, we have Brent Parker, president of the Regina Pats. He's about 5 minutes away. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about the Dustin Penner trade and about what Oiler fans can take from this season as far as progress and looking forward to the future. And coming up, Brent Parker from the Pats.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Oilers in Colorado tonight. Brule will not dress. The team has recalled Alex Giroux, second overall. It was scoring 65 points in 61 games in the AHL with Oklahoma City. He will be in action tonight. The lines go like this. Pajarvi and Eberle between Horkoff and Jones with Gagne and Omark. Cogliano between Reddix and Giroux. And Jock and McIntyre will play with Colin Fraser tonight. Once again, Brule not dressed. Up next, we have Brent Parker, president of the Regina Pats. Brent, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Just want to touch base. There's a lot of shared history between the Pats and the Oilers. The first Oiler WHA team boasted Billy Hickey, who's a legend in Regina. The current club has a legend from Regina in Jordan Eberle. These two teams go back a long way.
Well, there is. And I add Lauren Davis, obviously the longtime scout of the Oilers, who left us a couple years ago. And I was from Regina and a fixture at the Brandt Center for many games, and I know Jordan Eberle was one of his favorites. So,
I lived in Regina for years and years. I was there to watch Sillinger and all those guys play, and I just loved the Pats. But when you took over, whatever, 16 years ago and were GM for 15 years and now president, the team was at a low ebb. During your tenure there, there's been a lot of good hockey players go through. Is Jordan Eberle right at the top of that list or near it?
Well, he sure has to be. I mean, I think probably because of the type of person he is as much as anything. And, you know, I think if you look at last year being a local kid and all of the pressures and demands that were put on him through the community, through appearances and charity events, and I don't know that there was an 18 or 19-year-old kid that could have handled it any better than he did. He's just very much at ease, whether he's talking to a 12-year-old peewee player at their practice or at a business event. And he was just very much at ease and was able to communicate well and represented our organization extremely well in the community and on and off the ice.
Talking a little bit about Colton Tubert now, the Pats during your time have always seemed to turn out some top-quality defensemen, Morris, Brad Stewart, Barrett Jackman. How does Colton Tubert compare to that group?
Well, Colton's he's a throwback type of player. I mean, he's a big, aggressive kid. His motor's on full tilt all the time. He's one of these kids that's a high-energy guy. And him and Jordan were extremely good friends, and it was fun to watch the two of them kind of grow up together. They, you know, they'd always want to go against each other in practice, and they were pretty much joined at the hip for their whole 4 years they were here, and even 2 years with the World Junior team. And Colton's a tough guy to play against. I saw Steve's comment about that the other day, and boy, he's bang on. He's a guy that drives people crazy on the other team, and he never shuts up when he's on the ice, and physically he can back it up, and he's just a real hard guy to play against.
He's got size, and the initial response that we got was a comparison to Matt Green, but Green is a little thicker. Does he compare well to another former Pat, Jason Smith? Is that the kind of size he is?
Yeah, I think they have the same kind of leaner build. Colton's never going to be a real thick, broad kid. He's got a longer, leaner body to him, and he's got good length in terms of long arms, and he uses his stick very well. And you know, the big thing for him to make the jump to the National Hockey League is just improving that first step. He's a good skater. He just maybe needs to improve his quickness a little bit, and But yeah, I would think Jason Smith would be a real good comparison.
Okay. And I know that during his draft year, I remember seeing you on television the year he was drafted by LA, that he had had a phenomenal season leading up to his draft. Did he progress during his 18 and 19 year old seasons in Regina, or was it was there kind of a tail off there, or did he keep getting better?
Oh, I think he continued to progress. I think, like a lot of times when you have these young guys that have really good years at 16 and 17, the people tend to forget how old they are, and they expect their expectations grow along with these kids, but they do tend to forget that they're, you know, they're 17, 18, 19-year-old kids that have got a lot of things going on in their lives, and you know, they were stretched, their demands were stretched through the World Juniors and through, you know, the Subway Classic games and All-Star games and events in the city. And so I think maybe the expectations at times, maybe fans didn't feel that that he was meeting the expectations of what they thought a number one pick would be. But, you know, Colton, I think, in our opinion anyways, he progressed. And he had some stretches where he made some immature comments or young person mistakes, and that's exactly what they were, young person mistakes, and I think he grew from them. And the one thing about Colton that everyone always will find out there in Edmonton, and everyone here always knew, is that he wanted to win in the worst way, and not always went about it the right way, but he wanted to win. He's a competitive guy, like I said earlier, his motor is always on full tilt.
And you want a guy, if you have a choice between being, you know, having a guy who's brash and confident and somebody who's a little shy and retiring, for a defenseman with size and bulk and who can, you know, physically hit you, you like to have the confident guy, right?
Well, I'd rather not have to cattle prod somebody, exactly. I'd rather have to pull the reins back on somebody once in a while. And we had, you know what, we had our moments. I mean, Colton and I had some discussions in my office over the years, but they were never in a manner of him wanting to be a problem or a distraction. It was just he wanted to win. And as I said, sometimes these young guys, they don't go about things always the right way, and they, you know, make some comments or make some decisions that they regret afterwards. But that's all part of the learning process. It's all what we're here to do, is to help them grow as players and as people. And certainly, I think Colton did. And I was excited for him when he got traded. I think the LA Kings had such good depth at defense, and I think he's going to get a much much better opportunity in the Oilers organization. And to see him and Jordan back together was kind of comical, because, as I said earlier, they're joined at the hip for 4 years. They just couldn't keep them apart.
Does he have a? We had a gentleman on from the Los Angeles Daily News earlier, and he said that he felt he was somewhat limited offensively. He does have some offensive upside, right?
I think he does. He's got a very good shot. You know, I think when he was with us, like a lot of guys in junior, they're those high end players. They're asked to do some things that maybe they're not going to do at the next level. And you know, I'll go back and use player you mentioned earlier in Barrett Jackman. Well, Barrett Jackman played on our power play when he was here as a captain at 17 and played in every situation, and he's not a power play guy in the National Hockey League. He's a shutdown guy, and that's what he is. But they're asked to do some things here at this level because their skill set is just greater than some of the players. So, but I don't think he'll ever be a pure power play guy or quarterback of power play, but he shoots the puck good and passes the puck hard, and so I don't think he's somebody that's going to go through his career and score one goal every, you know, 190 games kind of thing. I think he can chip in just for no other reason than he shoots the puck well.
This is Nation Radio on Edmonton Sports Radio. Alan Mitchell in conversation with Brent Parker, president of the Regina Pats. Switching gears a little bit here, from a distance, Brandon Davidson looks like an exceptional young talent. His backstory is very interesting. He started playing late in his life, right?
He did, and, you know, we saw him at the Max Major Midget Tournament in Calgary when he was a 17-year-old, and I was watching him at a game at the Centennial Twin Arenas, and I was there to watch one of Halif's kid on the other team, and got chatting with Richie Sutter, and whose son Luke was on that team, and I just asked him why, you know, nobody had this kid on their list or on their radar, and he said he couldn't answer that. He said he felt that he was ready and wanted to. He hadn't played midget AAA the year before, just some financial restraints, and you know, he's worked very hard for everything he's got, and he's had a tremendous year for us, and I think he's just going to continue to grow and get better.
And he's a really nice puck mover. He's very talented that way. How is he defensively? Is he improving?
Absolutely, and that's was, you know, something that a lot of young defensemen have to learn, certainly. And but he moves the puck well. He skates well. Physically, he's strong. I mean, he needs to get stronger to play at the National Hockey League level. But no, like they all do, they need to learn how to play on their own end a little bit. But I think for us now, I mean, we rely on him to play against everybody's top line, and you know, he's just getting better and better defensively. I think he was one of our only plus players last year, and you know, he's not a plus player this year, but that's more of a team issue than it is Brandon's issue. And yeah, I think he, as I said, continues to get better and better. And he's such a tremendous young man and well-spoken, and I think he's got a bright future.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, he's got another year there of eligibility?
He could come back. He's a 19-year-old this year. He started in our league at 18, so he's a late-developing guy. And I don't think it would hurt him at all to play one more year of junior before he moved on just because of that. But, you know, the Oilers obviously are going to do what they think's best for him next year, but we'd welcome him back. But he could be eligible to move on and play in the American League next year. But as I said, I think it wouldn't hurt him at all to play one more year of junior hockey.
Pat's had a nice run this year and then faded a little bit and then obviously did some things at the deadline, but you're looking good for next year.
We've got a lot of guys returning. Chad's done a real good job trying to repair all the mistakes that the last GM made, and he's done a real good job. He's improved our team speed and got some good young pieces, and we had a really good draft, we feel, last year, and some kids coming in that are going to be a big part of our organization going forward. And there's lots of optimism inside our room and inside the organization, and hopefully we can put a little stretch down the last six games here and sneak into the playoffs, because I think it would be real good for our kids to get some of that playoff experience. But it's going to be tough to get in now, but I think we've played some meaningful games here down the stretch, and that's going to bode well for us down the road.
One more before we let you go, Brent. Give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch on a kid named Miles Bell.
Miles is a big, strong kid that has an absolute bomb for a shot. He needs to improve his play defensively. He hasn't played defense for very long. He played forward up until his first year at Bantam, so he's still relatively new at the position. But he's a guy that, it's kind of strange, he skates better with the puck than without it.
Mm-hmm.
I think at times he tends to stand still a little bit when he doesn't have the puck, but I think that's all part of the learning process of playing that position. But shoots the puck real well. Miles is a good kid, good family, and he's the exact opposite of what Colton is in terms of their build. Colton's that long, lean guy, and Miles is thick, broad shoulders and big arms and hands, and he's tough as nails. His biggest thing is just got to continue to work on his defensive play.
Brent, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Brent Parker from the Regina Pats, president of the team, and some interesting insight there on all kinds of subjects. The Colton Tubert, obviously Miles Bell, and a little bit of a little bit of back look as well on some of the history of the Regina Pats and the Edmonton. I'd forgotten that Billy Hickey was on the first. I'm an old-timey guy. I was a Bill Hickey fan and an Ernie Hickey fan, and both of them came out of Regina and are legends in that town. And it was interesting to talk a little bit to him about the a little bit of the history of the Pats and the Oilers. Some emails here before we take a break. A couple here. This is from Michael, and he says, I like Couturier. Who wouldn't? But if I were making the pick, I would go with a player who has shown more versatility. That would be Landeskog. He can fit in anywhere. He has grit, size, foot speed. And if we make a pick, I hope that we decide to take Landeskog. I don't think the Oilers will be moving that pick. Landeskog is an interesting guy because he is not the offensive force that a Nugent Hopkins or a Couturier is, but he has a nice wide range of skills. And if you're the Edmonton Oilers, you're looking for some toughness up front. He's a guy who might be able to play with the skilled guys, and he's a guy who might, you know, be able to contribute offensively too. So I don't know whether they'll take a chance on him. I still think it's a choice between Larson and Couturier from my point of view, but I don't know a lot about what the Oilers are going to be doing. We have something here from Jared. Good day with our season all but done. Do you think there's a chance the Oil will give a quick call up to our new acquisition, Colton Tubert, for a few game trial? Steve Tambellini said right at the time of the trade that he felt it was a longer item in terms of Colton Tubert coming up and being a part of the team. They recalled Alex Plante this week. Tubert scored a goal in his first game with Oklahoma City Barons, and I guess there's a chance that if there's a lot of injuries, he could get called up, but I get the sense from what the Oilers are saying that he's someone they'd like to have play down there, get a good run in during what is hopefully going to be a long playoff run, and then come to training camp and be a part of the team starting next fall. That's just what I'm getting from reading between the lines. Steve sends in an email saying, Elander just saved his team from relegation with an assist and a game-winning goal in the SEL. Apparently, he really shined. Do you think it's time to bring him over to Oklahoma City or to have him spend another year in Timrå? I always think that if they're ready to come over and maybe adapt to the American Hockey League and get a taste of the NHL, it's a good idea. I believe it really helped Timo Hartikainen. He's one of the best rookies in the AHL this year, and he's from Finland. He's had a really good year and a player that the Edmonton owners are probably going to be counting on in the next couple of years. A solid left wing with size. He can play on the power play, and he's good in the corners. So I guess from my point of view, the answer is yes, bring Lander over. He had a strange year this year. Up until Valentine's Day, he looked pretty good. He was 9 goals, 14 assists, and minus 4 in 42 games in the SEL, which is a tough league. It's a man's league. Since then, he's 6 games, 1 goal, no assists, and minus 10. So I was talking a little bit about line changes and how he was being used, and it's no doubt different, but that was a poor way to end the year. So maybe Anton Lander would like to come over and contribute to the Oklahoma City Barons. That's something to keep in mind over the next little while. Okay, this is Nation Radio on Team 1260. And coming up, we're going to talk about the Dustin Penner trade.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We're about 12 minutes before 2, and Live at Gretzky's comes up after 2 o'clock on Team 1260 Radio. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Dustin Penner trade and give you my opinion. For Oiler fans, the period of time from Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final in 2006 spring to today must feel like a Groundhog Day. It seems as though the club has been in constant rebuild and the established players are being sent away for picks and prospects every deadline, from Ryan Smith through to this week. It's important to remember that the Oilers changed ownership about 2.5 years ago and that Darryl Cates is the man spearheading the rebuild. The first oil change episode earlier this season told us that much, with at least one person from the organization saying Mr. Cates was the first man in the group to say the word rebuild, and everything came from that. So as painful as it may be, this rebuild began at the draft last year, the Taylor Hall draft. When the Oilers selected Hall, they set in motion a series of events that got us here. The realization that this isn't going to be a quick turnaround, that there isn't a free agent flurry on the way, or it's unlikely. Do you remember the trade deadline in 2006? Late January, the Oilers that year sent Tony Salmelainen, a mid-level prospect from Finland, to Chicago for a few weeks of Yaroslav Spacek. At the time, Chicago was dead in the water. They'd won 26 games the whole season and were painful to watch. Their big stars were Kyle Calder, Mark Bell, and Rene Bork. Those were the stars. And they, too, would soon go the way of Spacek to bring in the new group, and the group that we see now. The following season, the Hawks won 31 games. The season after that, 40. In 2008-09, they won 46 games. And in 09-10, the Chicago Blackhawks finally brought Stanley back to the Windy City for the first time since 1961. 2006-07 to 2009-10 is 4 years. And in my opinion, that's an aggressive timeline for this group. Kevin Lowe suggested on Hockey Day in Canada that it was a 4 to 6 year build, and that's probably a better template. Now, I was disappointed by the news that Dustin Penner had been traded as a fan. For an old guy like me, that's a long time. I'm already eligible to move into some seniors' dwellings, only the cool ones, but I am. And 5 years from now, I'm going to be that much older. But that's the deal. The owners have done their due diligence with their most important constituent, the season ticket holder, and the word they got back was fix it and get it right. And what's come from that is the rebuild. Oiler fans have plenty to look forward to, but the playoffs are a distant bell this year and next. And nothing drove that home better than the trading of Dustin Penner. There are some good things on the way. I believe this crop of Oiler rookies rivals any in the team's history, barring the boys on the bus. Let's have a look at those 10-11 rookies. Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Magnus Pajärvi, Linus Omark up front, Jeff Petrie on the blue line, and Devin Dubnyk in goal. Jeff Petrie appears to be that rather rare item. An Oilers draft pick is a defenseman who can play defense and offer some offensive ability, a nice range of skills. It's been a while since the club had that. Devan Dubnyk looks like he's going to be a goalie in the NHL. We don't know if he's going to be a number one starter or a mid-level player like Garon, but he's an NHL goaltender, and that's something they haven't drafted in a while. The top-drawer offensive players, Hall, Eberle, Pajarvi, and Linus Omark, are something special. If you go back years, 2007 rookies were Gagne and Cogliano along with Tom Gilbert. 02 gave us Alex Hemsky, Jason Chimera, and Fernando Pisani. 2000 was Comrie and Horkoff. 1995, Smith and Chatan. 93, Arnott, Bo Mironov, McCammon, and Maltby. Are any of those rookie crops clearly better than this one? I don't think so. So there are some good things to look forward to, and it starts with the rookies, and the rebuild began a year ago with the Taylor Hall draft. It's about 1:51. Earlier this week, Dustin Nielsen on the morning show here at Team 1260 had an opportunity to talk to Colton Tubert, find out a little bit about his style of play and where he is right now. And here is that interview.
We've got Colton Tubert, the newest member of the Edmonton Oilers organization, and he joins us on the show this morning. Colton, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing just fine. Newest member of the Oilers organization. Has that sunk in now?
It's just kind of starting to sink in right now. I mean, just starting practice here in Oklahoma City and just trying to get as close to the team as possible right away.
Take us through your last couple of days from the moment you found out you were dealt. What's it been like?
It's been pretty hectic. I mean, my phone's been off the hook with lots of family members and friends trying to get a hold of me, but I mean, just try to get packed up as quick as I could, throw all my stuff that I owned in Manchester that I could fit into my truck. And then I flew here and hopefully ship my truck up here later and just get adjusted and comfortable as soon as I can.
Have the Oilers told you what your role and expectations will be in Oklahoma City?
Well, I mean, just through seeing interviews about the trade, I think it's pretty obvious. They just want me to be a simple defensive player that's strong and moves the puck well and plays physical.
You're in your first full year as a pro. You know, you were pretty dominant defenseman in the Western Hockey League in your final year. Has it been tough not being able to be as dominant as you were in junior here in your first year in the American Hockey League?
Well, I think so. I think it's definitely a challenge. I mean, it's a bit of a jump coming from juniors where you're playing against 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds to playing against grown men. So I think it's there was an adjustment period for me right away, but I think I've really settled down into the type of player I want to play in. My last 15 or so games that I was playing with Manchester, I thought I was playing the best hockey of my career, just really solid and skating the puck well. So I'm just looking forward to trying to keep that going here for the rest of the season and push for a playoff spot here in Oklahoma City.
When you talk about the type of game you play, what can Oilers fans expect to see from you in the future?
I think just not flashy at all. I mean, if you don't notice me all game except for a big hit, that's a good sign. I mean, just real solid defensively and gets the puck right away to our forwards and let them do their work and just paying the price and really competing on the penalty killer or whatever situation I'm playing.
Colton, do you think you'll be ready to take a serious run at a spot here with the Oilers next year?
I think if I have a great summer of training and I really commit to that, I think anybody has a shot. I mean, you look at the roster, it's definitely it's a young roster and they're really looking to bring up young players. So I think if I continue to improve my game each day here in Oklahoma City and work my butt off in the summer, I think I'll definitely have an opportunity.
Does it make it easier knowing that, you know, the plan for you now would be to be here in Edmonton for the next decade or so at least? Does it make it easier having a guy like Jordan Eberle that you're very familiar with kind of waiting here for you?
I think so. I think the fact that we were just best buddies all through junior hockey, it would make things a lot more comfortable and just knowing somebody on the team. So, I mean, I've talked to him a couple of times, so I'm just looking forward to hopefully getting the opportunity soon to get called up and show my stuff and meet the guys up there.
Colton, great stuff, man. Best of luck in OKC, and we look forward to seeing you here in Edmonton.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
That was an interview earlier in the week, Dustin Nielsen with Colton Tubert, the newest Edmonton Oiler. I think the first overall pick is going to be an important, obviously, piece, but that LA Kings pick is going to be important as well. We'll talk more about that next week. By the way, the Oilers playing tonight. They did call up Giroux. He'll be playing on a line with Cogs and Reddix. The top line, Horkoff with Eberle and Pajarvi, and there's Jones, Gagne, and Omark, and Jacques. and McIntyre will play with Fraser. Thank you very much to Tyler Dello, Ken Simpson, Jason Greger, Brent Parker, JP Hormstra, and more. We enjoyed it very much, and we'll be back next week. I had word, and I can't confirm, but I do have word that we may be live from the Pint downtown next week. So we'll give you an update on that as time rolls on. Listen for that and more at OilersNation.com. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy your week.